if you're questioning your habits, is just give it a run, you know, give it a go. See if you can go a month, go a week or two or three or a month, or maybe even give it a year or something, and see if your life changes for the better. Go on that big vacation and see, are you actually strong enough to not drink the whole time?
Hey, Seattle firefighters, this is Jen Pennington, your host at Listen Up L27. Today, we're going to shift our focus a bit to talk about binge drinking. It's an honor to be blending personal insights from firefighter Warren with clinical context from Dr. Marcy Hamrick. We'll hear their perspective and see how they can provide practical tools for healthier behavior, all rooted in a deep understanding of firefighter culture. Dr. Hamrick, it's great to see you again, and it's so nice to meet you, Warren.
Hi, Jen. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So we're going to just kind of start this off a little bit with asking you, Dr. Hamrick, about some basics. How do you define binge drinking from a medical perspective, and why is it important to talk about it in the context of firefighters?
Yeah, it's a good question. Binge drinking, medically speaking, is defined as a blood alcohol level of 0.8 achieved within a 2-hour period. Practically speaking, that means for women, 4 drinks or more at a time, and for men, 5 drinks or more at a time. In terms of it being medically important, we think about the risks short term of having had that many drinks, which can lead to more risky behaviors, accidents, and that sort of thing. And then in terms of long term effects of binge drinking in particular, interestingly, people's blood pressure actually goes up more as a result of binge drinking than just low-grade daily consumption of alcohol. The other risks of drinking, including liver disease, heart disease, cancers, those are also true with binge drinking behaviors. And I think that it can be deceiving, because when people don't drink every day, they feel like maybe they're not at risk of those things. So that's also a danger of it, is that it can be deceiving.
As we talk about this subject, and Warren, we're going to hear a bit of your story, but one of the things I would like to ask you is to just tell us a little bit about yourself and your experience in the fire service before we get into this topic, because from your perspective, you have a lot to say, especially from a firefighter and a medical health perspective.
My name is Warren. I've been with Seattle Fire Department just over 3 years now. So happy to be here. Prior to that, I was a nurse for 14 years. And prior to that, I was in the Navy for 3. So as far as being with Seattle Fire, after the Navy, I was going to be a firefighter, and I kept hearing how hard it was. So I became a nurse, kept the dream alive, and then finally got the job.
We're gonna ask you a little bit about your experience and what drinking looked like for you, and when you started to question if it was becoming a problem.
All right. Well, I guess you could say I really enjoyed drinking as a social person. It was a social fun thing that I enjoyed engaging in. But as time goes by and you get older, sometimes maybe there isn't a party and you're still having a drink, and maybe it turns out it's not always as good as it's cracked up to be. And I started having children. So I've been sober now for just about 9 years. And funny thing is my oldest child is 9. And I also have a 6-year-old and a 2-year-old. But basically, for me, drinking was a fun social thing. But occasionally, sometimes you would wake up and maybe drinking isn't such a good idea. And then you forget about that. And the next time there's some sort of an engagement, seems like a good idea again, and there's no problem. But every once in a while, maybe the night didn't go as good as you wanted it to go. Once I started having kids, it didn't take long for me to realize that maybe drinking wouldn't be such a great part of my life anymore. And that's kind of what led me down the road that I've been on.
Well, first of all, congratulations on being sober for 9 years.
Thank you.
That's a great accomplishment.
I have another month to go, but I don't think I'm about to change anything. I've kind of realized that, at least in my experience, that I love the fact that I don't drink anymore.
And I think as we talk about like understanding the culture here, for many people, drinking is a part of how they blow off steam, celebrate, bond, like you just spoke about. But Dr. Hamrick, why do those patterns become so risky for firefighters in particular?
When I think of the risks that firefighters face, the top three causes of death in firefighters are cardiovascular events, cancer, and suicide. And all three of those are increased with alcohol use. So I think that's kind of at the top of my mind. And then I think the part of the risk too is that it's so culturally accepted that it takes sometimes a long time for people to realize that their drinking behaviors have associated risks because everyone around them is doing the same thing.
Yeah, I'd like to follow on with this with you, Warren.
I've been sober since I've been in the department. Right. But just in life, there's regularly you're exposed to commercials or you see people having a great time. And I actually don't mind being around people drinking. I like being a part of activities and things, going to concerts and whatnot. And there's regularly like, wow, that looks really nice, a refreshing beer in this atmosphere. And then I'd think, well, you know, actually, some people that don't drink probably don't partake in non-alcoholic beers, but I will on occasion have one of those. But I guess I'm kind of getting off topic there. But I'd say just in life, there's exposure to where you're exposed to things that make it seem like a great idea to have alcohol.
Did you realize that there are some things that were taking a toll on your health, your relationships, or performance at work, anything like that?
I would say since I've been sober, I'm like regularly congratulating myself and regularly loving my life. Like a good example is we go to Maui every other year. And prior to Maui, you know, maybe Mexico and whatnot, it is fun to come home from vacation as a sober person. Whereas when I would come back from vacation prior to that, it was just misery for days trying to recover from being on 2 weeks of, you know, uninhibited vacation fun drinking. And now as a sober person, like, oh, well, we're back and I feel great. But when I come to my annual physical, I'm not worried about my blood pressure because it's great.
Do you want to add to that, Marcy?
Well, I'm curious if before you noticed your sleep, your mood, problems in your relationship, like fights that would
yes,
come
everything
up
that you
regret.
Just said, 1,000%. Like, okay, so what was the first thing you just said?
Sleep.
Sleep. So talk to other people who I know enjoy drinking regularly, and they constantly have problems with their sleep. And I remember constantly complaining about having trouble with insomnia and issues with my sleeping. Well, it's because I had too much fun on one night. The next night, I slept great because I was recovering from too much fun. And then the third night, I couldn't sleep at all because maybe I overslept or my body's recovering. And so there's kind of a constant problem with insomnia and regularly drinking, especially binge drinking, because it's like drink, try to get healthy, be healthy for 2 or 3 or 4 days, and then have more fun, and then repeat the cycle. And there's constantly like this issue with sleeping. And since I've been sober, I don't have that issue at all anymore. And then what was the next thing?
Mood.
Mood, 100%. I'm not saying I don't have ups and downs, but I would say I consistently have a significantly better generalized mood on the day-to-day, whereas it might have been, okay, today you're going to have to really hide yourself and try to avoid people because you're grumpy and recovering from a hangover. And then maybe the next day, crawling out of that, getting into a better mood, and then, oh, let's have fun, and then repeat the cycle. Mood, constantly up and down. The next thing you said?
Relationships.
Of course, there's always battles with my wife. My wife, you know, like, oh, you had too much to drink. And yeah, just easily, I was much moodier when I was somebody who would drink. And I was obviously not trying to show that I was moody, but inevitably, when you have a few too many drinks, it can definitely turn you into a moody person. Was there any other things?
Did it affect your workouts at all?
I just remember going to the gym to, especially like if I had drinks the night before and I would go to the gym and be like, okay, avert your breath. Can I get a spot on the bench? And it's like, I hope I don't smell. Avert the breath. Can you spot me? Oh, God, I hope that guy didn't smell me. He might think I have a problem.
It's so real.
So, yeah, I don't know if performance-wise, but definitely like I remember working out and being like, oh, it's too bad I'm hungover and I hope I don't stink. Anyways, yeah. Don't have to worry about that.
Yeah, that's great.
So let me ask you, as you've, you know, you've hit your turning point, what kind of support or tools helped you start changing your relationship with them?
Well, for one, it was like my son was 6 months old, and we were on a camping getaway, and then I woke up and it was like, uh-oh, looks like I messed up last night. And it was kind of an unfortunate, you know, maybe that story is not so fun to talk about, but it was kind of a, you know, you've got your drinking life, your professional work life, and your family life. And it looks like the drinking life sometimes is ruining other factors that are a lot more important. And ultimately for me, it was having kids and realizing like, oh, you can't just be rough and tumble and do whatever you want anymore. You have to kind of look at what's really important. And that was the turning point for me, to where I really had to say, what are you going to do? And that's the direction I want.
Did you find yourself creating new rituals to sort of take your mind off things?
And, you know, I had to do some soul searching and reach out to some people. The first thing I did is I did go to an AA meeting, and I think the AA program is probably an amazing thing. I actually downloaded their app, so if I ever am wondering, I can always open the app and it shows me exactly how long I've been sober. In that app, it has their books, and there's lots of good little stories that can kind of make you, you know, kind of think about, like, is drinking something that's good for me or not? So I utilized some of the tools from AA. I didn't become a member and go regularly. Another thing is I reached out to a friend of mine, and he had a friend that I had met who had been sober, and I gave him a call and he talked me through the process. And one thing that I found out that really worked for me was meeting other people that had become sober, like a guy at the Y that I would see regularly. I overheard him talking to somebody, and it turns out he was doesn't do drugs anymore. He had a drug problem, and he had been sober for like 10 years. And so I found it really great every time I would run into him at the gym, and he would tell me about his experiences. And so just reaching out, meeting other people, learning what their experience was and how they got through it. And that for me was a huge step that helped me get through it. And this is kind of off topic, but I would say the first year that I was sober, and I guess I should also admit, my wife kind of said, I'm not going to be in your life anymore with our kid if this is what you're going to continue to do. So there was a little bit of a, you can go this way or that way. And ultimately, I think I chose the right direction to go. And that first year, I kind of felt left out. Like when there were barbecues, family get-togethers, vacations, I kind of felt like, wow, I'm left out. I'm not included. Everybody's having a great time and they're drinking or doing whatever. And then I realized after that first year, I don't know what it was. Maybe it was because I felt proud, like, oh, you did it a year. Now you can actually like relax a little bit. But I realized like I'm a social person as I'm starting to finally start talking here a little. It's like, you're not left out. Like, go have fun. You're kind of a loudmouth anyways. Like, crack open a Coke or a Pepsi and just go have fun and vacation. Sweet. I'm not hungover half the time. I'm just like having fun all the time. And I realized that next year and every year since then, it's just been awesome. Everything's awesome. I go to work, I go play, whatever I do, I don't ever have to be tired because of alcohol.
Great examples. Really great examples. I'm gonna actually pivot a little bit back to Dr. Hamrick and ask you, so what are some of the early warning signs you look for in patients that may suggest that alcohol is interfering with their health or recovery?
Yeah, I talk to people about alcohol in terms of their personal negative consequences, because sometimes they're there and we just don't realize them or we're not ready to see them. I talk to people about like how much you drink and sort of medically what is recommended and if they're drinking more than what is recommended. But the other question I ask is, why are you drinking? And I think that even if the amount is not quote unquote too much or medically problematic, the why of drinking can sometimes be more of the problem. Medically, I think, is this person at high risk of having medical problems? But then the other piece too is, what are those negative consequences in people's lives? Is it affecting their sleep, their relationships, their mood, you know, those things we talked about? And I try to elicit both, why are you drinking? What is good about it? Because no one would drink if there wasn't some good things about it. And I think that approaching it in that way of what are the good things? Because I know they're there, but also what are the bad things? And allowing people to explore that for themselves and perhaps recognize that there are more negative consequences than they think about day to day may indicate that it's time for a change.
Yeah. And this goes back to a little bit about having a conversation with people and making sure that there's no judgment or shame to bring up the conversation of alcohol. And I'll start with you, Marcy. Do you have any thoughts about that?
Yeah, I think that understanding that it's a very accepted part of firefighter culture and culture in general, that someone is not bad because they are choosing to drink. I also think in this population of people drinking as a possible self-medication for PTSD or depression or anxiety or whatever is troubling them from a mental health perspective, that it is just themselves trying to help themselves. And I have a lot of compassion for that also. So there's lots of reasons why people drink, and I don't have any negative judgment about it. And if I ask my questions coming from that place of no judgment, but concern, because if it is causing negative consequences, I want people to realize that, and that may plant the seed for change.
If they're not sure that they're ready to quit entirely, do you have advice or things that you want them to think about when they go home from your visit?
Yeah, I think being honest with themselves about the possibility of there being negative consequences that they don't think about often. Several people have told me that they have used an app. Like, I think there's one called Drink Less or Habit Bull or Habit Tracker, where you can use an app to track how much and when they're drinking. And just tracking it, kind of like a food diary, without a sense of judgment or I need to be doing something differently, but just bringing that mindfulness to drinking behavior, I think can also help people in providing insight about their behaviors of why they're drinking, how much they're drinking. And I think when you're tracking also, there is a component of like, how do I feel when I drink? Or how am I feeling when I want to drink? Why am I drinking right now? And I think that's some of the benefits that are possible when you begin to observe a behavior. You can gather all sorts of insights.
I would imagine, Warren, that you probably have some very personal insights, but what are some of the steps that you might recommend to your fellow firefighters?
I guess that one's hard, just because I kind of feel like I lost my drinking license. Like, I just wasn't a good drinker. You know, like maybe some people their family always gets together and they have barbecues regularly and they have a responsible amount that is maybe significantly higher than what Marcy had mentioned earlier about what a safe or a normal level would be. I think when I was having a really good time, I was probably putting her numbers to shame on at least a real good night. And maybe some other people that drink consistently and regularly, maybe they don't need to lose their drinking license because they're responsible every time they drink. I could also think, you know, 30, 40, 50 years of consistent, responsible drinking might also not be great for your health. There's a lot of things that alcohol does. I just remember, like, this is kind of a side story, but one thing I think about when I'm like, gosh, I'm glad I don't drink anymore. I remember drinking at a dive bar, and there was a group of older people, not to make any judgments on age, and they were hard drinkers. And I remember this lady, she didn't notice, side story here. When you drink, it numbs your nerves and you don't feel things in it. That's probably part of the reason why it feels good. But I remember drinking hard with my friends and looking at this other group of hard drinkers and noticing that one of the ladies had no idea that she had peed her pants. And I was just thinking, you know, that's so gross. And then, but, you know, who am I to judge? So anyways, I kind of got off story. I just had to tell that one. But, you know, so if you're thinking you're doing the good thing, well, maybe one day you'll be sitting there with your pee pants drinking responsible and you won't even notice it.
That's when you definitely have a problem.
Yeah. So I don't know.
We need you to come see Marcy.
I probably didn't even answer your question. I just want to tell a story.
Let's go down another path here and say, you know, there healthier coping strategies or reset routines you suggest for winding down after high stress shifts? And I'm going to ask this of both of you. I'll start with Marcy.
He probably knows better than I do, but things that I hear people talk about are working out. That's probably the most popular one. Like, we know that cortisol levels are high when people are on shift and coming off of shift, and exercise is one of the best ways of helping reduce your cortisol levels. So I think exercise for sure, whether that be intense workout or just taking a walk. We know that there's lots of mental health benefits to just the like repetitive motion of the like using both sides of your body alternatingly. It's what eye motion desensitization therapy is based on, which is a treatment for PTSD. Anything that like uses both sides of your body in a rhythmic fashion has been shown to be therapeutic, and walking fits that bill. Even better would be being in nature. Like, walking in nature is an awesome way to reduce your cortisol levels. I think talking with people that you enjoy, being with people that you enjoy, if you're up for it, taking a nap is awesome. Even a 10-minute nap has been shown to give you like an extra hour of like function. They've shown that people coming off shift are actually driving like a drunk driver some of the time, depending on their sleep. And a 10-minute nap can give them an hour of extra time where they can actually drive better. So certainly power naps, I'm definitely in favor of too.
I'm in envy of people who can power nap so well. I'm really in envy of that. But Warren, did you see any healthier coping strategies or reset routines for you when you wanted to wind down?
Honestly, everything that she just mentioned sounds amazing to me. I love a good nap, and I feel like it definitely has a lot of benefit. Good low-level cardio. Like, I didn't even think about walking, but as I reflect, I'm like, yeah, walking really does make you feel good. I've had success with jogging. And then, of course, lifting sometimes, just getting that extra testosterone boost, and usually makes me feel better about myself. Exercise, low level, high level, naps, and then ice baths seems to be pretty popular. I've had a lot of exposure to that being here in the fire department. And I've kind of had a long history of liking getting in cold water, but the actual trying to sit in the cold water for 3 or more minutes, and it at least does something where you feel good for a little while after. So that's kind of my little bag of tricks for feeling good. Maybe throw in some meditation in there or something.
That ice bath will definitely, you know, get you thinking about something completely different.
You're worried about just how cold it is right then and there, nothing else.
And so, Warren, let me ask you this. What surprised you most, either in how people responded to your decision to cut back or how you felt as a result? I mean, I think we can hear from you that you feel great and, you know, this has been the best thing you've done for yourself. But how maybe have other people responded to you since you've been sober for so long?
I think people just generally, they're like, oh, wow, that's cool. You know, sometimes maybe some people will be a little bit quiet about it, but usually it's just kind of a fun topic if they're comfortable talking about it. And seems like usually anybody I've talked to about it seems to support it.
How do you think that your leadership in the fire service can address some of these things? Is there something they can do, or is it more of a peer-to-peer kind of solution?
Maybe it is a peer-to-peer thing. Like, wow, that's kind of neat that, you know, seeing somebody else doing it and the benefits that they seem to get out of it. Maybe just peer-to-peer is one way that it would continue to help more and more people decide that they should slow down on drinking if that's what they want to do.
Warren, what do you want other firefighters to know, especially the ones who might be questioning their own habits lately?
Well, the one thing you can do if you're questioning your habits is just give it a run, you know, give it a go. See if you can go a month, go a week or two or three or a month, or maybe even give it a year or something, and see if your life changes for the better. Go on that big vacation and see, are you actually strong enough to not drink the whole time that you're in Mexico? Because there's, anytime you go on any fun tropical vacation, there's always pressure. There's kind of getting bombarded with advertisements. Even just driving down the highway, there'll be some billboard with some sort of tantalizing picture that makes you just say, God, I need a beer like that. I guess I have to have one right now. And let's see if you're actually strong enough to go the whole time. And like I had mentioned, it took me a year to kind of realize it's not a bad thing. It's a good thing. You can still do everything you did before. Like you can even go out with your friends and go out to bars if that's what your group of people does, and you could probably have a great time and not have any worries about it.
In hearing Warren, what he just said made me think of how it's a mindset shift that's required.
It is.
Like psychologists sort of talk about this mindset.
Yeah.
And how we associate alcohol with fun or vacation,
yeah,
or letting off steam or taking the edge off of stress. And it is a shift in our thinking to think of something else doing that.
Oh,
or
totally.
That alcohol also makes me feel crappy the next day.
It really does.
It like affects my sleep negatively or whatever. And it just requires that little bit of shift in our thinking. Well, not little. It's actually a really big.
It's a huge shift.
And it's completely counterintuitive to all marketing and social pressure.
Like, oh, you feel good now, but then, hey, you got 4 to 8 hours of feel good. Well, guess what? Now you get 36 hours of not feel good.
Well, it's why I was so inspired by our conversation about this.
Well, thanks for inviting me.
It's no small thing.
Yeah.
The shift that you have done. And I was so happy to hear all the positive changes that you were describing in your life as a result of it.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. And I think you have a really great positive outlook. And that is definitely the thing that comes across is listening to you and just, you know, sitting here with you. You can just feel your excitement and your exuberance about, you know, where you are in life right now. So I really want to thank you both for being on the show. And hopefully this can help somebody down the line. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us. Listen Up L27 is a Seattle Firefighter Healthcare Trust production. This podcast is produced by the Rhizome Collaborative. I'm your host, Jen Pennington, and until next time, stay safe and stay healthy.